It can't be ignored, John. The biggest story in sports involves a two-way player for the Dodgers who's only playing one way this year. That's Shohei
Absolutely. And he had his press conference yesterday, if you call it that. Certainly did speak, did not take questions. We're anxious to hear the whole story. He did tell his side of the story yesterday, and hopefully it's the right side of the story. Hopefully it's correct. But we're going to learn a lot more about this over the next several weeks and maybe months. Maybe this drags on through the year. But this is the story of the year in baseball.
Yeah, the Dodgers were already going to be the story of the year, and we have miles and miles to find out about guilt or innocence on Ohtani and on Ipe and just what was going on there in that mess. Matt Blake, the pitching coach of the New York Yankees, lots to talk about. Gerrit Cole, Stroman, Rodon, Luis Gil making the rotation as the fifth starter. You and I will play hit or error at the end. People might not like my error. I'm going to give it away right away. There's going to be an error, and I'm going to take on a couple of organizations and their behavior. That's if you stick with us on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman. Anymore. I mean, you're still down in Florida, but you're going to get on a plane to Houston real soon. I'm back in New York. I'm going to be at the Met opener. You're going to be at the Yankee opener in Houston. But the biggest story in not just baseball, but sports right now, I believe, is off the field. It involves Shohei Ohtani. It involves his interpreter and much more than that, his longtime sidekick, Ipe Misahura. I hope I got that right, John. You could always Ipe. You could always help me with translations. Ohtani had we're talking on a Tuesday here. On Monday, he had about a 10-minute press conference. I'm sorry, I'm not calling anything a press conference where the press doesn't get to ask questions. He had a conference of some type where he made a statement, and essentially the big thing that came out of it is he said he was a dupe, essentially. He had no idea what was going on. He's never bet on baseball. He didn't authorize Ipe to use this $4.5 million from his account to pay for gambling losses. So we're at this critical moment. The feds are looking into it. This bookie in Orange County. Lot to digest here, John. Why don't you we'll play some tennis. Why don't you go first?
I mean, at this point, I hope that Ipe, the interpreter, is guilty and that he's a rogue operator and that Ohtani really didn't know anything about it. And he's a financial dimwit, as I suggested in the New York Post. That is a possibility. That could be the story. It does seem weird that he would know so little about his finances that $4.5 million or more could be deducted by somebody else and moved to a betting site or a bookie, illegal bookie. It's weird, but I mean, $4.5 million is quite a bit to me and you, and probably most of the people watching or listening. But to him, it's not that much, and maybe he didn't. He does not seem to be that interested in money. If he was, he would have waited 2 years, been a free agent 4 years ago, and cashed in huge back then. If he cared about money, he wouldn't have lived in a condo across the parking lot from Angel Stadium for the first several years. He was an Angel. So, I mean, there are some good signs that potentially he is a financial dimwit, which is very positive and very possible at this point. But there's a lot more to be heard. I mean, you've got to be able to answer questions from the media. I mean, the guy rarely talks to begin with. And that's another question I have about this translator's job. What was his job? The guy didn't speak, so he didn't do any. He didn't have any translation to do, really. I mean, I was in Dodger camp 3 days. He didn't talk any of those days. I don't know. You were there. I don't know if he talked at all, but I
One
mean,
day.
maybe he was his driver, but he lived across the parking lot. So how much driving do you need? I'm not sure what the guy did. And at this point, I guess we're all hopeful that he's just a crook, but a lot more questions to be answered. And we've got to hear from Ipe. His first story was that Ohtani magnanimously paid it off the debt. And I like that story better. I like that story. I wish they had stuck with that story. But
And
this
remember,
story,
that
I think, is
story
a little.
was spoon-fed by the agency also, right? Initially, like his spokespeople made him available to, I believe, ESPN, right? to give
I
that
don't know.
story. And then later on, they changed their story. That's why it all felt fishy and still feels fishy even later on. John, just if I were going to jump in here, I think you back me up. We've seen this over the years. Like, there used to be a time where we'd actually see major league players get their meal money for the road. You see, like, the traveling secretary, you know, if it's roughly $100 a day, it's a 7-day trip, they're peeling off. The players would look at that money like it was gold. Like, but they're making $5, $10 million because the reality is, and I know this is hard for maybe the average person to understand, they like don't deal with their money. It's spouses, it's money managers, et cetera. I mean, if I were going to make it really personal, John, and I understand we're talking about different levels of this. When my mother passed away, my father had no idea how much money was there. Like, my father thought his job was to work. And it was my mother. He had never written a check in his life, back when you had to write checks, et cetera. So, like, I do think it's possible that because I think you were putting this near the hole for us. To think of this person as just an interpreter is to miss it. Like, he was his nanny. He was like Alfred to Batman and Bruce Wayne. You know, he knew all the secrets. He took care of everything for him because all Ohtani was interested in, we think, is what's between the white lines. He's so dedicated to baseball. Like, if you care about the sport, you hope it doesn't come crashing down because this guy was gambling in general illegally or gambling on baseball, worst of all. Like, there could be this innocent possibility. But, John, he has to talk publicly. For as much as baseball can make this investigation transparent, and again, the feds are involved, they got to lay it all out there. I give Bart Giamatti credit. It could be forgotten to time how popular Pete Rose was. You know, I grew up a Cincinnati Red fan in Brooklyn because I loved Pete Rose. And they let the investigation go where the investigation was, and they threw out a baseball, arguably the most popular person who was involved in the game at that point. And if this investigation shows the worst, then the investigation shows the worst. Let's hope we never get there, because it would be very destructive to the sport we cover. But there has to be a high level of transparency by the Dodgers, the Players Association, the feds, MLB, because there's gambling everywhere now. And we need a blueprint in some way on how to handle this, because we're going to unfortunately be handling it a lot moving forward.
Yeah, you know, that was big, obviously, but this would be a lot worse. This would be a lot bigger if Ohtani has some betting involvement. I mean, this is the best player in the game, you know. Obviously, Judge Acuña, fantastic, but nobody else can be a great pitcher and a great hitter. He's the best player in the game. So this would be a lot worse for baseball if they did find out that he was the one betting, or that Ipe was betting on his behalf. You know, a lot of questions to go. I mean, you know, we talked about the money manager. Maybe he doesn't know anything about it, but the guy who's making, you know, $70 million on the field and probably another $50 million or more off the field, he's got to have a money manager, right? Is the money manager not watching the account? Or maybe this was such a small account with only $10 million in it, some petty cash, that he wasn't watching that? I don't know. I guess it's possible. But to me, he does have an agent. He, you know, obviously it's a big time agency. I would think they'd give him, they found him the interpreter, I think. They must have found him a money manager, right? Were they not looking at exactly what was going on with his money? I mean, he had no idea at all. $4.5 million was just gone in $500 million increments. It's just gone like that. I mean, we got a lot of questions.
500,000.
And I don't, yep. 500, sorry, 500,000. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. There's so much money involved in this. I can't even.
Well, you had a petty account with $11 million in it. So, I mean, I know we're dealing with a guy.
At 500,000 a time, he still should know what's going on, even if it's $500,000 at a time. We're going to have to know more. I mean, you know, some people thought he said more than anyone would have thought he was going to say, but you know, it was specific.
No, Moore is taking questions.
But you got to answer questions. I mean, the guy doesn't answer questions to begin with. We don't know. And one thing that struck me with the stories out of the Angels camp, that the players were surprised or whatever, that he was gambling. They don't know anything. Okay, I mean, we'd be surprised that a guy was gambling. It is surprising on its face, but they don't know anything about this guy. They didn't know he had a girlfriend and he got married. They had no idea, right? So just to quote players saying, I'm surprised, they don't know him. He is not known by anybody. We still don't really know this story.
Yeah, no, John, look, I'm with you. I'll tell you, so one of the things that scares me about this story, So I was blown away a little bit recently by how many people I know have gambling apps on their phone. Maybe I'm naive, I'm prudish, I'm not a gambler, I whatever. And I do think we're raising a generation of fans who think that to enjoy the game, you need to have a little action on it. And even if it's micro betting, $5 here, $10 there. And so I think this is now part of it. And I would even say, like, if Ohtani were betting, as long as he wasn't betting on baseball, I think the generation now is just like, of course, everybody gambles. And so I think there's that. What scares me about the eBay involvement is, and should scare the crap out of baseball and scare the crap out of all sports. Because again, John, you and I know this because we've covered for a long time. How many people are around a team and know what's going on that are not just players, not just coaches, not just managers, but clubhouse guys who make what a year, umpires who make what a year, the third hitting coach who makes what a year, the fourth analytics guy who's around the team. You're telling me ePay, first of all, I don't know how a bookie extends $4.5 million of credit to someone unless he knows
Great
the
question.
real person behind the money to cover it. That's number
I mean,
one. But
he was the highest
what's
paid translator in the world,
right?
but he's not going to be able to
Not
lose
four and a half million worth.
$4.5 million.
But what scares me, John, is the bookie who says, "Hey, would you like to make the debt 3 million? Pitcher X was in the paper the other day that his elbow hurts a little. Is he starting tonight or not?" And we're seeing this. The NBA is going through one of these with the guy Porter from Toronto, where the question is, was he pulling himself out of games to get under on some of his personal prop bets for people? So, like, if for example, that X pitcher has an elbow thing and he's being limited to 55 pitches tonight, but the public doesn't, and is over under 6.5 strikeouts, you could tell people. And this is all leagues, it's not just baseball. Am I a prude, John, that this scares me because it really begins to strike at the integrity of the game? And if you don't believe in the outcomes of the game, we're just back at the 1919 White Sox again and a crossroads where, ironically, we'd need Babe Ruth and we have our current Babe Ruth in trouble.
You know what I don't like is that, first of all, I'm with you. I don't think you're prudish. I think a whole generation of young men are getting caught up in gambling, and I think it's unfortunate. So I'm with you on that. What annoys me to some extent, because we're in the baseball business, is that March Madness, NFL, they've all profited from betting. The leagues have, at least anyway. Maybe not the individual bettors, but the leagues are all like, oh, there's so much extra interest because of the pools and the betting on football and on March Madness. But baseball, all people know about baseball is the 1919 scandal and betting. Ba 1919 scandal, the Pete Rose, it's all negative. It's unfortunate for baseball that is the way it is at this point. And I know that Ipe talked to ESPN and give, I think her name is Tisha Thompson, great credit for doing an interview with him at some point. And getting a lot of information and being in front of the story. But I mean, he told her that he didn't bet on baseball. We're gonna have to find out whether he bet on baseball because, I mean, if you're down $3 million and you're betting on all these sports which you don't know that much about or certainly don't have inside information and losing, why wouldn't there be a temptation to say, I know something that's going on in baseball. I know Anthony Rendon isn't playing again today, as if maybe that's not such great information. Probably that happens all the time. But he had some inside information. Why would we assume that he's going to be honest about that and say he's not betting on baseball? I mean, there's just so much more to ask and answer about this story. And I'd love to see Ohtani actually take questions. They will be able to look at all the records and figure this out eventually. And let's hope. I mean, I like the first story the best, where Ohtani bailed him out. Now, someone will complain if Ohtani bailed him out and paid the $4.5 million to the bookie. They'll say, "Oh, he's consorting with bookies. That's not good." Okay, that's not good, but he's a generous guy who bailed out his friend. I like that story better. I wish they had stuck with that one. Apparently, they don't think that's the right story,
Well,
but
I
the
hope they don't
story we
stick
have
to a
now
story, John. I hope they tell us the truth at some
We
point.
want the real
Well,
story, but
that's what I
maybe
want.
this is the real story. It seems weird to us because
It
how
screams
do you
about
not know what's going
incompetence
on with
of this
millions of
group if
dollars?
this is the real story and they let this guy out in public to tell a lie at first. Like, I wonder how he thought he was going to get away with it. There's just too much there that doesn't add up. I am perfectly willing to believe Ohtani's version of this that he said at the press conference. I've never bet on baseball. I didn't know about this. But man, there's got to be a lot more than that press conference for me to get there.
Right,
And that falls now on him. It falls on CAA, his agency. It falls on the Dodgers, his team. It falls on Major League Baseball as an institution. It falls on the Players Association not to just fall on swords, to not let things become transparent. This is a major issue about the integrity of the sport. And we must know transparently everything we can that the feds are going to. Now, I assume this is all going to go slow. We've all dealt with the federal government in some way or the other. Through our lifetimes, and we know they don't move very quickly. And so this case has probably been brewing for a while. They are building it slowly to get the bookie. Who even knows if Ipe or at the worst Otani was a subject here, if they care about it. They're trying to go after the big guy here, though. Well, of course, to us, Otani's the big guy. It will move slowly regardless of the speed. Anything that can be made public in an age of conspiracy theory where everyone thinks the worst needs to be made public so that the fans and report everybody has belief that what we're watching is a real competition and not being baked.
Yeah, absolutely right. Otani is not the he's not the subject. I don't see how he could be the subject, and neither is Ipe, really, because a gambler, a person who's betting money, even with an illegal bookmaker, is never charged or prosecuted. It's always the bookmaker who is prosecuted. How many people are betting in this country illegally? Now, obviously, there's a lot of ways to bet legally, so there's no reason to bet illegally. So it might be fewer now, but there are tens of millions of people betting illegally. Nobody gets charged. This is more about the perception, the brand of baseball, the integrity of the game, and that's it. I mean, Otani's not getting charged. If Ipe's getting charged, it's because he transferred somebody else's money into his account. That would be a thievery, which is not really gambling. It's just stealing. So he's under at least some suspicion of this, at least from Otani's side. We shall see. We have not heard from him yet either. At some point, I think we're going to need to hear from him. So a lot to go on this story. And, hopefully it is one of those two stories that, and I guess it's more likely to be the one that Otani told, which is that Ipe was a rogue operator who fell behind and paid off the debts with Otani's money. If that's the story, that's probably good for baseball, but I think Otani needs to get a better financial guy looking at his money, and he needs to choose his friends a little bit better than this.
Yeah, right now his defense is I was an idiot. It's quite a defense, but
that defense worked.
That's a better defense. Yeah, yep, that's a better outcome for everyone, including the institution of Major League Baseball.
He's a baseball genius. He's a baseball savant genius, one in a billion. And, that's what we're looking at. But he may be an idiot when it comes to his finances.
You know, the Dodgers were going to be the story on the field because of how big they are, the super team they put together. And now this is just going to add to whatever is going to go on with their season. It's certainly going to hover over both Otani and his season. Let's see, John, if you and I could return to the field when we come back. Our guest is the pitching coach of the New York Yankees, Matt Blake. John and I are so pleased to be joined by the Yankee pitching coach, Matt Blake, who is speaking to us from Houston. The Yankees open their season on Thursday, 4-game series against the Astros. Then they move on to Arizona before returning home for their home opener against Toronto. And there's so many interesting things to ask about your pitching this season, but it's hard to just ignore the obvious. Gerrit Cole won the Cy Young Award last year. You could make a pretty good argument that he's the best pitcher in the sport. And you guys are going to be without him, I would assume, for about 2 months. Can you give us some idea of what he's dealing with now and what you think his progression back towards the majors looks like?
Yeah, it's probably still a little early to know what the progression looks like. But obviously, we're trying to just get him back to being symptom-free, which seems to be currently trending in that direction. And then it's going to be, I think we stated, like a 3 to 4 week, shutdown period for him, and then kind of build him back up. First couple of weeks, it'll just kind of be some easy throwing just to make sure we're in a good spot, and then kind of a normal kind of on ramp from there, pending how things go early on.
Just to follow up on Cole a little bit, since he is the best pitcher in baseball, I don't think it's arguable, but okay. When he was throwing in camp, He said that the recovery was different. It felt like the middle of the season. It didn't feel like spring training. But it was reportedly that he was. It was reported that he was. The velocity was good and the command, things like that. Could you tell anything when he was? Were you? I don't know if you were there because you're not. It can't be everywhere at all times. But from the what you saw, could you tell anything from him? And is that a big issue that it's that the recovery can he could tell that he wasn't 100% something with the recovery.
It was kind of one of those tweener ones for us where like his stuff, like the shapes, the command all looked good. Metrically, the pitch shapes were where we want him to be. The velo probably was in line with where we wanted in the first outing, and then it was maybe a touch lower. And sometimes with Garrett, like as we build the volume, he does a really good job of managing his intensity, so he kind of has a puts a governor on himself. And so I wasn't overly concerned about the velo not being at the top end while he kind of built it up his pitch count. But then just some of the feedback, over the last three, four spring trainings, every now and again early in camp while we're building up the 2-inning live to the 3-inning live or on kind of shorter turnarounds, just the way the schedule works out. So those are always kind of the ones where you're a little nervous about before we get onto the 5-day routine. And it was kind of in that period where it just wasn't quite bouncing back as quick as we hoped. And then it just, we got to a point where we were just like, all right, do we want to manage this, in the short term while we're building up, or get this, just kind of, looked at and make sure we know exactly what we're dealing with. And that's kind of where we did that.
Matt, I got a dual question just again, because Cole is so big and important. The first thing I would want to ask is like just your level of confidence that rest and medicine and then like a spring training like buildup will bring him back. And then I'm sure we'll end up talking about a lot of these players as we go along. But how confident are you if he does miss the couple of months that you have the infrastructure in place right now to replace him with what you've got?
Yeah, I think so. To answer that, like, are we confident in the infrastructure we have around him, the other players? Is that what the question was?
I won't take the first one. Like, what's your level of comfort and confidence that medicine slash rest is getting him back? And then I guess part two is, if you do get him back, will you be in a pennant race because you believe in the group you have right now?
I think, obviously we gather a lot of information in that kind of week and a half stint, where we were like, in the information gathering stage, and sounded like they felt pretty confident that we could avoid, obviously, the surgery route right now. And, obviously it's going to take some time to make sure we get symptom free and then kind of build from there. But sounded like Garrett left the doctor's office pretty confident in that plan going forward. Obviously, it'll take it one step at a time, and then I think I have as much faith in Garrett knowing his body and understanding what the progression looks like, and to really dominate the rehab progression. So I think we feel good about that, and it's just a matter each time he picks up the ball, just getting inventory on how it feels, what it looks like, how he responds, and kind of building each step. And then second to your question, yeah, I feel good about the group we have, and obviously, like these guys got to pitch well, regardless of whether Garrett's taking the ball every fifth day or not, for us to be competitive. So, obviously, we come into the season with, Nestor taking the ball opening day now, Carlos in game two, Stroman game three, and Clark Schmidt game four, with Luis Hill game five, which was been a nice surprise for us in camp, just not knowing what we're going to get with Luis, coming off really two missed years. But felt like for him in particular, he took a big step forward with his strike throwing, and the velocity kind of returned back to what we knew him, and added some secondary options that maybe he didn't quite have before. So that was a really nice surprise. And then obviously it's those main four guys really holding their turn and give us a chance to win every night.
With Rodon last year, what was it, health? Was it New York, or does he need to refine his stuff? And does he look like he's done that for this in this spring? And you feel confident that he's going to be back to his normal level of performance?
Yeah, it feels like a little bit of all of that, to be honest. The health obviously was the first part in spring training, having the forearm kind of elbow flare up on him, and then it was the back, and then kind of getting back into the swing of things. He's hitting the ground running at 65, 70 pitches as like his first couple outings while everyone else is in midseason form. So, it just takes a little while to get in rhythm, and I don't know if we ever really got that last year. So think that there's just a lot of things at play there, big contract, injury, trying to get going, stop start. So I do think there was a little bit of the league has adjusted as well, which is compounding on the problem that the fastball slider mix has always been his bread and butter. the league is adjusted to the fastball up. They know him. There's archetype for who Carlos Rodon is that they kind of measure themselves against. And now it's time for him to continue to evolve. I think he's coming to camp in a really good spot. Obviously, the velo's been solid for the most part in spring training, and look to kind of continue to level that up as we get into the season. But he's added some weapons as well, in the cutter and the changeup, and obviously not getting too far away from what makes him Carlos in the fastball slider, but just having some wrinkles to go to where the league, can't just sit in one area and just look to, attack that spot.
Matt, I really dislike combination questions, but I got one again because I think one leads into the other, which is, you had a pretty high profile incident with him at the end of last season where kind of turned his back on you on the mound. So my question, dual question is, are you good with him? Is that relationship good? And do you, this is your 5th year in New York. Do you think there are some people who just shouldn't play here? And does he fall into that bucket?
First question. Carlos and I are fine. I think, obviously a lot was made of that at the end of the year, and rightfully so. It's, one of those moments at the end of the year you wish you could have back. He wishes he could have back. It was, a lot of things bubbling up for him as, the season kind of came to an end on a negative note. But, I think in my role, and the people and the personalities you deal with, like anytime you walk out onto the field, it's like, walking into, a lion's den. So it's like these guys are full of emotion, and when things aren't going well, those kind of things can happen. Now, do I wish he handled it differently? Of course. And we've talked about it, and he knows that's, not the way to approach it. So, I think, that's something going forward that we just, know that's, it's not the way we want to approach the mound visits. And that's something we all agree upon. And, the next part of that is, are there guys that, struggle in New York, and is he one of them? I don't think he's one of them. I would, I appreciate his confidence in himself and the way he handles, adrenaline and the way the environment can kind of pick him up and get the best out of him. But, certainly the environment can be challenging because of all the things, we all know, just the noise in the environment, the expectations to win. It's just, it can be, a really hard environment to thrive in if you're not ready to handle all that extra stress and pressure. But, I certainly don't think he's, one of them.
Nestor, opening day starter. Where does he stand? He was really good in 2022 under you as well. Last year, I believe injury was the issue, but how's he throwing right now?
Yeah, I felt good about his camp overall. Obviously, last year, with the little bit of hamstring entering camp and then trying to play catch up, but to get to the season, probably started behind the eight ball a little bit and added stress to the shoulder that he was, continually fighting back from every outing, and just felt like the quality of work in between the outings was hard to get just because he was always trying to get back to, 100% for the next outing. And obviously, the shoulder caught up to him about midway through. So I think we had a good off season. Just kind of, he got here early, just like Carlos, took care of his body, got his throwing program in check. Feels like the velo's back in a good spot. The shapes are in a good spot. Feels like he's responding to the volume increases throughout spring training. So I think the biggest thing for me with all these guys is, do they put themselves in a spot where they can get the work in to make sure they stay sharp and that the velocity and the shapes stay the same? And I think he's in that spot right now.
I have a feeling, Matt, we're probably going to work our way through this whole rotation here before we're all said and done. I will. I found it interesting the last 2 days how great Stroman and Schmidt look. On the other hand, it's the last 2 days of spring training. It felt like the Pirates and the Mets were swinging in the parking lot to seem to get out of there. So let's deal with Schmidt, who I kind of find interesting. That was the Mets A lineup out there yesterday. I was with you down in Florida. And I mean, he was really, again, I think even if the Mets were trying to go quick, it seemed he was really good. Has he graduated to something? Because you mentioned you're going to have to rely on four. Three of them are former All-Stars. Schmidt is in his second full season as a starter. How much, what is he to you right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's capable of being a strong middle of the rotation starter for us, and not even looking at him as like the back end starter and, the guy that was young last year and sorting out how many innings he could handle. I think, his arsenal is continuing to evolve, looking to make some adjustments off of last year and handling left-handed hitters, getting a little bit more depth on the curveball, continuing to improve the cutter command, bringing the changeup back into play. So, these guys typically that don't have a true four-seamer, they kind of have to have a little bit of a kitchen sink approach to the lefties. But I think he does a nice job of kind of moving the ball around in different areas and getting to his strengths. But ultimately, it comes down to just commanding to the right areas against the lefties. And I think he's ready to take a step forward. I think last year was big for his confidence, and hopefully, we can build on that.
All right, we're going to hit everybody in the rotation. Marcus Stroman next. It seemed like the Yankees didn't really like him too much as a pitcher a few years ago at the trade deadline. He went to the Mets. I think from what I understand, people were saying he wanted to go to the Yankees even then. So, I mean, I guess it's a plus. He's a New Yorker, yeah. Wants to be in the Bronx. How is he throwing? How is he fitting in? Because he does have an interesting, quirky personality. Obviously, a very smart guy, went to Duke. Yeah. But how's he fitting in? How's he throwing? And what's your confidence level in him?
Yeah, Marcus has been outstanding so far. And you know, I've always had admiration for, you know, since he's been back at Duke, when I was scouting him in the Northeast, I felt like this is a guy I really enjoyed watching pitch. And he's continued to evolve over the years. And you know, right now, I feel like he's in a good spot mentally and physically about who he is and what he needs to do to be successful on the mound. And I think that he's fit in with our group really well. And, you know, it's as much, you know, notoriety as he gets for, you know, being loud in the media or whatever, I feel like he's fit in and he's super, you know, gets along with his teammates extremely well. He has a lot to offer. He's inquisitive. He asks a lot of good questions. So I think the guys have really enjoyed being around him, and he's going to give us a chance to win most nights.
Matt, you mentioned I'll finish it out. You mentioned that Luis Gil won the fifth starter's job. And, you know, anybody who saw him make those six starts 2 years ago before he needed Tommy John, the stuff was overt. It was about seemingly could he get it over the plate, and he's gotten it over the plate. What I find fascinating is something you and I talked about during spring training, and I wrote about it, which is that you guys are not going with pure innings caps anymore on someone like Hill. You're going to kind of use some of the modernity that you have between starts to measure guys. Take us through it. Like, you're beginning the season with Luis Gil. I think not too long ago, we would have said, when are you going to stop him? What are you doing now as a organization where you feel like you could start with him and maybe even end with him in your rotation?
Yeah, I think we got to be smart about it. I think that to put an arbitrary number on like how many innings, we don't really know what that would look like. You know, whether it's 100, it's 150, it's 180. I mean, if he's in a conversation where we're getting to 150 to 180 innings out of him, something's gone extremely well for him throughout the year. But I do think it's being smart about just what the course of the season looks like as far as his pitch count goes, how many times he's going on 5 or 6 days, and giving him extra blow as needed, just knowing he hasn't carried that kind of volume. But I think it's, you know, with anything, it's taking all the information we have and trying to sort through it on a game by game basis of, you know, what's the delivery look like? What's the pitch metrics look like? How's he recovering? What's his work look like in the weight room and training room? You know, some of the objective measurements we have in those areas that we can kind of just see where guys are physically trending and, you know, how much recovery they're getting in. But I think it'd be hard pressed to say this guy's going to get 200 innings, but I just don't think we have an arbitrary number that we would stop him at. It'll kind of be as we go throughout the year. What does this look like? What's the best role for him? What's it look like for the rest of the group? So all those things kind of combine together on that.
All right. I'm going to ask you about somebody not in the rotation. In fact, not even with you guys with the Yankees now, and that's Jordan Montgomery. You obviously had him. You've done an incredible job as pitching coach. I mean, even last year when the team had a negative run differential, the pitchers did fantastically. It certainly were playoff worthy. Obviously, the injuries in the offense kind of hurt the team, and that's ultimately why the team had, in the words of Brian Cashman, a disaster of a season, which I think is actually nice to say it's a disaster when you have a winning record. You know, what are your thoughts on Montgomery? I mean, we've heard that the Yankees are still in contact. I mean, obviously, we're all surprised he's still out there. But you know what? He, you know, he had kind of I wouldn't say a bad breakup, but he had a couple thoughts on the way out. And he did very well last year. You know, overall, what are your thoughts on him? Are you hopeful that the Yankees now sign him? Or what do you think is going to happen here?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much I'm allowed to comment on where we're at with him or, you know, even as a free agent. But, I you know, just with our time with Monty, you know, I obviously really enjoyed having him around. The guys really like Monty. I thought he continued to evolve every year that he was with us, and obviously continue to learn when he went to St. Louis and Texas. And, you know, obviously really excited to see him have such a great success last year in the postseason. But I do feel like in 22, like a lot of that evolution was happening with us, you know, before we even traded him. And, you know, the way the sinker took hold that year, I think there was a lot of times where we're trying to figure out what fastball was the best version for him, two seam, four seam, cutter, you know, because obviously he does such a nice job using his secondary and the changeup and the curveball to get swing and miss. But felt like the league continued to adjust on him, and his sinker got a lot better in that first half in 22. And that became like a really primary focus for him. And the usage went up a lot. And then obviously when he went to St. Louis that year, the four seamer grew a little bit, and then ultimately resorted back to the two seamer as he continued on. But, you know, I just think this is a guy who is gaining a lot of confidence each time he, you know, takes the ball and goes deeper into games and, you know, gets his chance in the postseason. So he's tried and true. You know, he can do it in this environment. So, I mean, I really like Jordan. So I don't know where that leaves us as the Yankees, but, you know, I look forward to seeing where he ends up.
You know, I'll follow, you know, if he's on another team, it'd probably be impolite to say anything. And if he's a free agent, you are disallowed from saying we're not going for Jordan Montgomery. But
yeah.
I think other than that, you are allowed to talk. I don't know, maybe it's not, I don't know whether what the team thinks of that or what, but I mean, would you like to have him on the team?
I'm sure he'd make us better. You know, he's a great pitcher, but I'll defer to Cash and Hal on where we are in that.
Okay.
Without him and also without Cole, and the Yankees, quite frankly, have traded a lot of pitching over the last 3 or 4 years, including four guys who very likely, three of them for sure, and a fourth in Drew Thorpe, who likely would have pitched in the majors this year for Juan Soto. So one of the things that you had to get accomplished during this spring training, Matt, was to find depth again. One of those pieces, Luis Gil, is in your rotation. Are you comfortable and confident in the Warrens, Beaters, you know, Luke Weaver, et cetera, of what you have coming when and if you need it?
Yeah, I think what we saw this spring was really encouraging. Obviously, we'll never know until we get into the, you know, thick of the season and see how these guys respond to a little adversity when we're in the, you know, major league environment. You know, some of these, you know, household names they got to face on a nightly basis is a challenge. But I do think what they showed us in spring training is very encouraging and probably ahead of what maybe we expected coming in. But obviously, Luis Gil took the job. He had an outstanding spring. Will Warren put himself right in the thick of the race right down to the end. And obviously, I think that's a guy that's going to help us in the near term. And, you know, Clayton Beter, obviously, we think highly of. He traveled to Houston with us and, you know, with, you know, pending anything else happening, would likely, you know, start with us this week. But, you know, obviously, all those guys have shown well in spring training. Luke Weaver's grown a lot. You know, obviously, he's been a little bit of a swing role right now, whether it's a, you know, fifth, sixth starter or the long guy in the pen, but made some nice adjustments from the end of last year into this year. And I feel like all those guys, you know, have been competitive, and it's just a matter of finding the right role for them and the balance amongst our 13 pitchers to get outs every night.
You know, the Yankees don't have Rivera anymore, obviously, in that bullpen, or Wetland, or Nelson, Mendoza, all the great bullpens that they had in their championship years. But you've done a great job with the bullpen. I mean, obviously, Yankees have been really good out of the pen without the big names. How do you feel about the group this year? I mean, to me, I'm not a scout, but to me, Loaizaga's stuff looks incredible. He looks like he could be a superstar, but, you know, what do you think about Loaizaga, Holmes, and the rest of that group that you have right now?
Yeah, obviously, Holmes and Loaizaga are kind of the two, you know, main names that people know here. I think Ian Hamilton's kind of putting himself in that mix. You know, Tommy Kane, they'll be back hopefully early in the season, just a little bit of a slow play right now. But, you know, Loaizaga had a good offseason. Obviously, it was a tough season last year with a kind of stop start and a little bit of elbow issues going on. But nice offseason, came into camp in a good spot. The velos looked really good. He continued to work on the breaking ball, the changeups in play. But I think what we try and find a way to be as consistent with his routine and innings as possible, where I think we're you know, loosely targeting, you know, kind of some modified rules or just around how he pitches to get him through the first half and see how it goes. But the more we can keep him on the field, the better. And obviously, Clay Holmes has really emerged as, you know, one of the better closers in the league as far as I'm concerned. So I think he's taken to that role and really owned it. And obviously, he's had some hiccups along the way, but his confidence is as good as it's been, you know, since I've been here. And I feel like he's taken a nice step forward.
What are the modified rules with Loaizaga?
Just kind of just being smart about, you know, in the days off in between outings. You know, I don't know if I don't necessarily want to get into exactly what they are, but I think just being mindful about, you know, how many times we're getting him up, you know, if he's, you know, pitching multiple innings, are we, you know, what's his rest period look like? You know, I wouldn't say it's too dissimilar from how we handled King last year, but at the same time, maybe not as much length as, you know, maybe we got from King at times where he was in the 50, 55 pitch range, maybe a little more modified version of that.
Matt, as a way to close up here, I want to stick in the bullpen a little. This is, I believe, your 5th year as pitching coach. I know it's not a one-man job, but the run prevention has been terrific in your 5 years doing this. And one of them is, you mentioned names like Clay Holmes wasn't very good with Pittsburgh. Jonathan Weisiger, I believe, was released by the Giants. Wandy Peralta was decent, but never great anyplace else. Ian Hamilton was like a 5 ERA guy with the White Sox. You've kind of seemed like maybe you found something with Nick Birdie this spring. Why are you guys good at this? Identifying it, refining it, and getting stuff out of it in a pretty tough place to pitch.
Yeah, I think you kind of nailed it there. It's definitely a collaborative effort, and I think that's something that we've done really well as a group. And getting a lot of people involved in this process. It's not just myself or Mike Harkey or Desi Drushil that basically as the major league environment is helping get these guys, but it's the player acquisition from the pro scouting and analytics side. It's obviously the player development group, funneling players up to us. But I think we do a good job of identifying some things that guys maybe do well, even though the surface level statistics suggest they haven't been pitching at a high, level. And I think just get these guys to understand who they are and buy in and commit to, what they're really good at, and then, kind of put some, blinders on about the other stuff and not worry about the environment and the expectations, but like just grow into the role that you're given. And, like last year, Ian Hamilton would start to get some high leverage spots. And I said, just believe that this is who you're supposed to be. Like, this is what you are evolving into, and you're going to get a lot more of these opportunities. Don't be surprised by it. And these guys, like, credit to him, he just takes it and, doesn't look back.
Yeah. Look, in your job, you have to learn how to be a master ad-libber, right? 6 weeks ago, we thought opening day was going to be Verlander Cole. Instead, on Thursday, we're going to have it's Valdez and Cortez, still two pretty good lefties who will be
Totally.
out there. We know before it's all said and done, you'll probably have to use 20, 30 arms. But Matt, you've shown over the years you could figure it out. John and I do appreciate you joining us on the show.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me on.
We, of course, thank Matt Blake for joining us. John, we're about to start a major league season for the last time in spring training, hitter error.
My hit is the New York Mets. They went out of their way and spent good money on JD Martinez, an excellent DH with a 133 OPS plus career-wise. And Pete Alonso now has that hitter behind him. We've talked about this on this podcast, I don't know, probably 50 times, probably too much. This was the move for the Mets to make. So I give the Mets and Steve Cohen, who foots the bill, the plus, the hit today. It was not cheap. I mean, it's 12 million, but it's deferred. So it's 10 million something plus the tax of 11 million. So $21 million for a DH who, if he has another career season like he had last year, is basically a two war player, could give them two extra wins, could put them in the playoffs. I think it's going to be a good fight in the National League. I think they understand that. They're right in the thick of it, looks like on paper. So good move by the Mets, and happy to see them spend the money and get the job done.
John, I think you didn't like how many hits I had in a row, so I'm gonna kind of become me again. I got an error this week, and it's to the Astros, the Yankees, to some degree the Mets, and the institution of Major League Baseball and the Players Association. John, you're still in Florida. You should be in Houston. There's a workout tomorrow. The Astros and the Yankees, who are probably the least media-friendly organizations in the whole sport, are not letting reporters into the workout. This is at a time where the industry keeps talking about how they want more coverage, and yet Yankees and Astros right now are as big a series as you could get. The Mets are holding a workout tomorrow at Citi Field. They're not opening their clubhouse. Look, I think this is one of those moments where it could be very much, hey, you're whining because it's your industry. I hope fans see it. I generally don't give a damn about a lot of the information, but I sense that the fans do. And that's why, I saw Clayton Beter shaking hands with people yesterday, and that's how the world found out that he made the team. I think I was the first one to do it because I went over to Clayton Beter because I had access, and I said, "Clayton, I see you shaking hands with people. Were you informed you made the team?" He told me yes. So access allows us to ask questions that you'd be interested in as fans. They can't let a million fans into the clubhouse. If you're fortunate enough to make a career out of it, like John and I have, you get access, and with the access, you form relationships. The more access you have, the more kind of time you have to take. And look, let me just tell people what they're losing. I'm a big John Heyman fan when I want it. John Heyman's still a guy who's got the team made, and I watch him. He talks to a lot of people in a clubhouse. He provides a lot of information to the people who read the New York Post, who see him on MLB Network. He's not resting on his laurels. And just understand, that's what guys who are really working it do. Access is our lifeblood. To make this more enriching in information and entertainment for the people who read us or watch us or thankfully listen to us. And I just think that teams like the Astros and Yankees, who, by the way, didn't let people, I think they were the only two of 30 teams last year when there were early players for the WBC, did not let reporters into their facilities last year. They're the two worst. They're the two worst. And they're playing a series that people really care about, and they are keeping reporters from covering their workout tomorrow. What a crock. What an insult to fans. I hope the fans see it. This is a screw you to the fans who care about that series.
Well, I agree. Thank you very much for nice words back at you, Joel. Absolutely. You're working every angle you can work at this point, which is amazing. What have you been, post 35 years now, something like that? I was shocked yesterday when I found out there was no workout for us, that it was closed. I'm with you. These are the worst two teams in terms of public relations in baseball, and they've joined together. And I shouldn't have been surprised. I guess I covered the Mets the last few years, and you know the Mets are a lot better about
Mets
it.
Mets are a lot better.
They're a lot better, and so are all the other teams, or the other 27 teams. They're all a lot better than these teams, and I don't know what they're afraid of, because 99% of the Astros coverage is positive, even after what they did in 2017. Are their local writers killing them every day? Are we still killing them? You know, we mention it once in a while, maybe, but their writers aren't doing it. The Yankee coverage, maybe it's not 99%, but it's probably 95% positive. I bet, you know, half the media is either working for the team website, the team radio station, the team TV station, even MLB Network, but even the ones who aren't, there aren't a ton of muckrakers left out there, and there aren't a ton of people who are writing tough columns all the time. Maybe Dan Shaughnessy in Boston, and hats off to him. His columns are hilarious and, usually right on. But most of us write nicely about the team for the most part, so I don't really know what they're afraid of. And, you know, for me, it was I haven't seen the Yankees in a while. I'll figure out something to write without talking to anybody, except for the Aaron Boone Zoom. I do agree with you. I mean, it's a slap at the fans, not just us.
You work in a media relations department. You should probably have relations with the media. And please, especially those two organizations, don't tell me how much you love the fans. Please don't do that. Don't tell me how much you love the fans when you don't make unfettered reporters have access to do their jobs well to enrich the fans' experience. That is nonsense. What wasn't nonsense, John, was we again thank Matt Blake. We, as always, thank Jake Brown. Dan, want to do it, John?
Shalom.
Dan Shalom. Our producers, it was going to take me at least 12 shows. Anybody who is a bettor who has it on FanDuel, the over-under was 12 and a half shows. I'm sure I'll get it right at some point.
Five more to go.
Yes, the New York Post YouTube page. Please go to it. Check out the show. Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to our show, give us a 5-star rating. Send us some comments. We really do appreciate it. And John, next time we get together, man, we're going to have regular season. I guess the opener at City Field might get rained out, but we got a whole weekend of baseball before you and I reconvene on the show with Joel Sherman and John Heyman.